All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton. I got to ask you now to swivel in your chair toward the map on your wall or go and Google up the old world. I need you to find the Caspian Sea there and look for South Ossetia and Abkhazia. That's the subject of this interview. Our guest is Pat Buchanan, former Nixon speechwriter. Now he writes at antiwar.com/Pat. Well, we run his column there. And he's got this great piece called Baiting the Russian Bear. Why are we baiting the Russian bear? Welcome to the show, Pat. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing great. Appreciate you joining us today.
Sure enough, we're at the beach, but I'm delighted.
Okay, good deal. Well, and I'm glad there's no hurricanes coming at you or anything.
Well, we ran back to Washington, D.C. and waited for the hurricane to pass, and we came back over to the shore.
Okay, right on. Well, I hope there's not too much flotsam and jetsam in the water.
Right, it's fine. The ocean's fine, all clean.
All right, good deal. All right, so it kind of seems silly on its face that two teeny little provinces, Abkhazia and South Ossetia, are so vital and so central to the future of mankind, but apparently they are. I was wondering if you could give us a little bit of the background of the history of these provinces, their relationship with what we call former Soviet Georgia and the Soviet Union, and the history leading us up to this point. I know you can do it pretty quick.
Okay. When the Soviet Union broke up, Georgia, which was one of the republics in the Soviet Union, broke away. And these two pieces of Georgia, Abkhazia and South Ossetia, at the same time, they split away from Georgia. And there was a bloody war fought in both Abkhazia and South Ossetia, and the Georgians were expelled. And Russian peacekeepers came in, and the Georgians had not controlled them for 20 years, or almost 20 years. Then in 2008, Georgia invaded South Ossetia at the time of the Beijing Olympics. And when they did, the Russians moved back into South Ossetia, drove the Georgians out, and occupied parts of Georgia. That was the war when in 2008 when John McCain was saying we are all Georgians now and all this other nonsense. And according to a lot of the propaganda in the West, the Russians had started the war. But that was dead false. The European Union found out the Russians had not started the war. Russian peacekeepers had been killed when the Georgians attacked, but the Russians expelled them in short order and took parts of Georgia, which they eventually gave up. So that's the situation, that Abkhazia and South Ossetia remained separate from Georgia, and they declared independence lately. And now what we've got is a United States Senate resolution by voice vote declaring that Abkhazia and South Ossetia are both parts of Georgia, that Russia is guilty of aggression, that Russia is occupying these territories, and that they ought to be returned to Georgia. Now, this is a preposterous intervention by the United States in a place that is of no vital interest. Secondly, it is an inaccurate state of events and of what has happened. And third, it involves us in a potential conflict there, which could bring us face-to-face with Putin's Russia. In this one, and the Russians are not always right, or maybe not normally right, but here they are dead right in their depiction of events and in what the situation is. Now, the Abkhazians and South Ossetians may not love the Russians too much, but they want no part of having the Georgians come back in and control them. And why the United States should say, or the U.S. Senate should, by voice vote, say that ought to happen, escapes me.
Well, now, to go back over the details a little bit there, like, for example, in the war in 2008, I'm not sure if you mentioned the part about how it was that the Russians got into it. They already had peacekeepers on the ground in South Ossetia for some reason.
Right. Here's the Russians had the peacekeepers in South Ossetia after South Ossetia and Abkhazia had broken away. There were Russian peacekeepers there, and no one objected to their presence there. But when Georgia attacked, and it's proof of the attack, Russian peacekeepers were killed in South Ossetia. Now, how could that have happened, any Russians, peacekeepers be dead, if the Russians had attacked first? They did not. That's how they were killed in South Ossetia. What happened then was the Russians knew or were aware that the Georgians were going to attack, and after the Georgians attacked and were in South Ossetia and were shelling the capital with heavy artillery barrages, the Russians came through what's known as the Rocky Tunnel, crossed the border into the Russian army, crossed the border into South Ossetia, drove the Georgians out, and took parts of Georgia. They also used paratroopers, I think, and hit various airfields in Georgia. They counterattacked, but the aggression was done by the Georgians, and the European Union, as I said, conducted an extended investigation and declared that Georgia was the aggressor.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the way I remember it, only the American media said that Russia started it. The whole rest of the world went with the story that had come out. I mean, it was in the middle of the night their time, but it was in the afternoon over here, or maybe the evening over here. And all the initial reports from the British press and the German press and whatever, the Israeli press, were that Georgia invades Ossetia. There was no question about who started it. And the New York Times in, I think, November 08 after the election said, it did a whole article about, yeah, I guess it turns out that we sort of were wrong about that for the last few months there.
But it was preposterous, as you say. If you follow the news by the hour, the Georgians had plunged in there. And, Scott, it stands to reason. How could there be a single dead Georgian body in South Ossetia if they hadn't gone in first? How could there be Russian peacekeepers dead in South Ossetia if the Russians had a premeditated attack? And if the Russians' premeditated attack was not into South Ossetia but into Georgia, why would they give the Georgian slices of Georgia back? And this is the whole point, was that everybody, as you said, in the world knew exactly who had attacked. Now, there's no doubt the speed with which the Russian army moved through that tunnel and through the Georgians out, no doubt suggests that they were well aware that the Georgians were planning this or planning something. So they were prepared. But there is no equal doubt but that the Georgians attacked. Now, let me add something else here. There was Randy Schoeneman, who worked with John McCain, was a lobbyist for Georgia, trying to get Georgia brought into NATO. He helped get a couple other countries brought under the NATO umbrella, which means the United States soldiers are required to defend them against Russia. He had a hand in this whole Georgian operation, was very close to McCain. And there are other lobbyists in Washington, D.C. right now who have to be behind this resolution of the Senate. I cannot believe that Gene Shaheen up there in New Hampshire is really deeply concerned about South and North Ossetia and Dagestan, that she would have dreamed up this resolution herself, she and Lindsey Graham. So my belief is that the lobbyists got to them and drafted this thing for them, and they just signed on to it. They got all these other sponsors on it, and it passed by voice vote. However, and he shall be nameless, a United States senator contacted me and told me I was not for that resolution, and I tried to get to the floor to make sure it was not unanimous, and that I would have my vote would be registered against it, but all of these voice votes are unanimous.
Hmm. I mean, in other words, if it passes, they just record it as unanimous?
Well, they might have two or three people on the floor.
Right.
All in favor say aye. Mm-hmm. And then they said, and that's where it said it was unanimous, because there was no one that opposed it, but it was not a roll call vote.
All right. Now, so what we have here, obviously, we have the giant false premise about the 2008 war there, underlying the Senate resolution. But then, we have the question of the rest of this. Why? I mean, other than just lobbyists somehow convinced these ignorant men, which we are talking about the U.S. Senate, but, I mean, this is the U.S. Senate, and Russia relations, this is a touchy subject, nothing to be taken so lightly. So I'm trying to find out, you know, what's really going on, what the policy is when we get back. It's Pat Buchanan. Check him out at antiwar.com/Pat. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton, and I'm on the line with Pat Buchanan. He is a syndicated columnist and a political commentator for MSNBC, and, of course, is known as having spent his entire career apologizing for the Russians. Right, Pat? right. No, actually, that really isn't right. You were always known as a Cold War hawk. You're still to this day unapologetic about your Cold War stance during the Cold War. But now that it's over, what, something's different?
Yeah, certainly it's different. Our struggle with the Soviet Union was an immense ideological and imperial struggle with a mighty global empire, which was a malevolent empire and intended only evil and destruction for Western civilization and ultimately the United States if it could bring it about. But when the Soviet Empire collapsed and the Soviet Union collapsed and Russia abandoned Bolshevism and communism, and they took the Red Army out of back from the Elbe River 1,000 miles to Russia, the Cold War was over. Our war was over. We don't have a war with Russia. There's no reason why the United States should be interfering in the internal affairs of states in the Caucasus, which are as close to Russia as you know, Tijuana is to the United States, and that's what Abkhazia is. There's no reason why we ought to interfere in the internal affairs of that region, which is rife with terrorism, anti-Russian terrorism, secessionism, Islamism. I mean, it's a terrible situation there, and the Russians have to deal with it, but that is not our problem. And the idea of restarting a Cold War with Russia after our entire lives were designed to end the old Cold War without getting into a hot war, it seems to me, is outrageous.
Mm-hmm. Well, and would you argue that America treated them unfairly in the 1990s when we could have helped them write a constitution like ours and help give them real free markets? Instead, we gave them all this shock therapy and helped the oligarchs loot and destroy what existed of the Soviet infrastructure.
Well, that's exactly right. Russia, the Cold War was over, and Russia reached out in friendship to the United States, and we sent over a bunch of these hustlers that work with the oligarchs and the others to loot everything in Russia, steal all of their assets. Then we moved the NATO alliance, which was designed to prevent the Russians from crossing the Elbe River and reaching the English Channel. We moved it all the way up to the border of Russia. Indeed, we brought in three former provinces of the Soviet Union, three former provinces of the old Russian Empire, the Baltic states, and basically we continued to treat a country as an enemy that was reaching out to us in friendship. I mean, this was not Reagan's idea. Whatever they say about Ronald Reagan, he not only detested nuclear weapons, he wanted only strategic defensive weapons that destroyed nuclear weapons, and he was walking in Red Square in 1988 in December, and the Russian people were slapping him on the back. And that was the way he wanted to end his presidency and wanted to end the Cold War. And now we got people in the Congress of the United States and the Senate, some of whom are being pushed by lobbyists, who seem to think it's a good idea to have a second Cold War.
Yeah. Well, if nothing else, it's really bad sportsmanship. You know, the politicians care so much about America's image in the world. That's all they ever talk about. But what do we look like there but the worst sore losers of all, or sore winners of all?
Well, exactly. It was very opportunistic on the part of the United States. And what it was, and frankly, the neoconservatives were very much behind this idea. At the end of the Cold War, we had a great argument and a debate. And our side of the argument was written, and we wrote it up in a number of magazines, argued that now that the Cold War was over, let's become, as Gene Kirkpatrick said, a normal country in a normal time again. All of these Cold War alliances and tripwires and threats and war guarantees, get rid of them. Dissolve them. Bring the troops home. Let the Europeans defend themselves. The Russians are 1,000 miles further east. The Europeans are richer, fatter, and more numerous than the Russians. Let them defend themselves now. And they got two countries that are nuclear powers, Britain and France. They could do it. I mean, Eisenhower said in 1949, if we're still in Europe 10 years from now, American troops, NATO will have failed. In 61, he urged Jack Kennedy, bring the troops home from Europe, otherwise these folks will wind up as dependents of the United States. And we didn't do that. And at the end of the Cold War, we should have done it. But the neocons got into the whole idea that now that the Russians are down, let's rub their faces in it and let's make a lies, military lies, of former Soviet provinces and former Soviet satellite states. And if the Russians felt that they'd been double-crossed and betrayed, they were right.
Hmm. Well, now, what's this policy about? It's got to be the pipelines, right? Sticking all those soda straws under the Caspian Basin there.
Well, that's one of the things. My view has always been if you're going to build a pipeline from Georgia, from the Azerbaijan through Georgia to Turkey, the Ceyhan-Cebu pipeline, then why not build one through Russia as well? Get a multiplicity of pipelines so if for some reason one of them shut down, the others are open, and everybody's got an incentive to keep them open. You do try to cut the Russians out of the oil trade of the Caspian Sea if you want the friendship of the Russians.
Yeah. Well, and this seems to be a lot of the policy in Central Asia, too, is preventing peace pipelines. You know, Iran, Pakistan, and India wanted to build a pipeline where they're all working together. But no, that has to go to the port of Karachi and onto our boats.
Well, exactly. And now, of course, I will say this. I read this morning that Putin is there with the head of Exxon, which is working with Rosneft, to exploit the oil and gas resources in the Arctic now, and because Exxon's got the technology, and they're in Russian territory, but they're going to work together, and that's what you ought to do.
Yeah,
let's work with these folks, and if you get engaged with these folks, and we both have vested economic interest, and then there's less and less likelihood that some kind of collisions, and they occur, some kind of collision is going to lead to some more serious conflict.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I don't think you can really overstate the danger of thermonuclear weapons, right? I mean, both sides still have thousands of these things at the ready. It's as though the Cold War never ended. Did I lose you, Pat? I thought he was waiting for me to ask a question or something, but no, apparently I lost his phone. Oh, well, I guess that's the way things got to be sometimes. Let me try again real quick. We got a couple minutes. Nah, not really. We really don't. All right. Well, anyway, that was Pat Buchanan, everybody. Unfortunately, I had a telephone problem there. All right. Well, this is Anti-War Radio. And again, that article at antiwar.com is called Why Are We Baiting the Bear? It's a good question. That's a real good point he's making, too, about that brand new news. I hope you saw it just the other day. Exxon working with the Russians to extract oil from deep under the ground in Siberia, or in the Arctic somewhere anyway. And, Shell Oil was punished, I'm sure probably for some sins of their own, but for some sins of the American politicians for sure. And Vladimir Putin had nationalized all the work that they had done and kicked them out of the country at some oil fields in Siberia. And so that was quite a few years back now, 7-8 years ago maybe. So maybe now we are making some progress. And man, you can't look. Who can beat the whatever neocon Georgia lobby in D.C. if not Exxon? That's what I want. I want to fight a good old-fashioned Yankee cowboy war. Only with everybody all switched around now. And I want the oil men to tell those neocons to shut up and quit picking a fight with the Russians. We are making money here. Because let me tell you something. I've observed that we can't seem to stop the neocons. So, calling all Exxon vice presidents. Don't you think your lobbyists ought to mention to your senators that we're trying to get along with these people here? I would think that's important to you. Because, like I was just trying to get Pat's comment on before his phone went out on us there, we got thousands of hydrogen bombs pointed at each other still. And we need to resolve that. And we need to just be friends, period, full stop, with the Russians from now on. All right. It's Anti-War Radio. We'll be right back.